Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We're going to start off this program with a clip from California, and it's an update on the earthquakes that have been going on out there. We thought that this would be the most pressing thing that we could do tonight, and then we'll fill in after that with as much of the current news and so forth. That in the second hour, don't forget to listen to that Trump speech from the Lincoln Memorial. So here we go with a clip from California and an update on what's going on out there on these earthquakes.
All right. Good morning. Thanks for being here. I'm Mark Gilarducci, Director of Governor Newsom's Office of Emergency Services. Here at the State Operations Center, we're in the second operational period following the 7.1 magnitude earthquake struck up in the Ridgecrest area. Let me start off by really conveying our continued thoughts and with all the folks that have been impacted by this and the communities. They have had a week-long series of earthquakes and earthquake swarm, and then of course they had the large 6.4 and now the 7.1, and they have been through a lot, both in Ridgecrest in Kern County, and in Trona in San Bernardino County. And so that whole area there, we are continuing to keep them in our thoughts and prayers and working very, very diligently to support all of their efforts. Today, as the sun came up, we started to get better situational awareness from local authorities and state assets that are on the ground in both communities. We're happy to report that, there is damage. As we reported last night, there were a number of structure fires. There were gas leaks. The power was out for a majority of the communities. There was road damage, rock slides, et cetera, things you would see in an earthquake of this magnitude. But the damage that we are seeing this morning in the light is not as extensive as one could have expected. Now, keep that in mind that we are going to be continuing to do extensive damage assessments. Will require a detailed review. And for those individuals and homes and the local governments that are continuing to respond, all assets continue to be provided, both fire and rescue, urban search and rescue, law enforcement, mutual aid assets continue to be made available and are engaged throughout the region. Last night, there was shelters that were open, and the population of the shelter reached us about 200, a little under 200. As a series of aftershocks are occurring, it makes sense and logical that people would be a little bit concerned about being in their homes. And so we saw larger shelter populations last night. The Red Cross continues to support those shelters. But in addition, logistically, we have moved into place a significant amount of support in the way of cots, water, meals, and other commodities to make available as necessary. Also happy to report that the major grocery stores and commodity distribution points are back operational. That's a very significant positive step to ensure that those local supermarkets and other local community stores can be made available for individuals to be able to get supplies and food and other commodities as they begin to do their cleanup of damages. Still quite a bit of non-structural damage in each of the homes, people reporting things like glass breaking and shelves that have been overturned, etc. But there have been also structural damage to homes, and as I mentioned earlier, some structural fires, predominantly driven by broken gas mains. Today, the power is virtually back on across the city of Ridgecrest. There's a small portion that still is out, and roughly 46 or so customers. And in Trona, the power is still generally out, working on that to try to get the power back up today. In addition, water they're finding not as big of an issue, although we've got water commodities available should it be necessary. Right now, both communities are reporting that they have enough water. So those critical lifelines are important and continue to be monitored by us. The state will, of course, as you know, yesterday Governor Newsom did request from the White House a presidential emergency declaration. The emergency declaration is a declaration for immediate direct federal assistance. That allows us to turn to our federal partners and get life-saving assets. With us today is Bob Fenton, the regional administrator from FEMA. FEMA is already engaged here with us at the State Operations Center as a result of the quick request by Governor Newsom. FEMA has been providing already support for us on the ground. We're also deploying today damage assessment teams and structural engineers in support of Kern County and San Bernardino County, and that's really to go in and start looking at a little bit more granular review of the damage that has occurred. That helps us to build what are we looking at like in total losses, destroyed, damaged, major, minor, to be able to put that information together to make the request for a major disaster declaration. At this point, the State Operations Center is in level one full operation, will remain this way until further notice. The governor has approved all assets of the state to be made available. He updated the state of emergency last night to include San Bernardino and to reflect the new damages associated with the 7.1 that occurred last night. Today our effort is really going to be to continue to work with both San Bernardino and Kern County and, of course, the cities, the town of Trona and the city of Ridgecrest. Have had, again, further discussions with the elected leaders and the operational folks, police chiefs and fire chiefs in both communities this morning. That communication link is working very well. Communications overall from cell capability and other communications modalities are working well, and that's also positive. And you'll hear a little bit in a minute that while we've had a significant amount of impact to our roads last night, throughout the night, Caltrans did an unbelievable job in working to get roads patched and fixed and rock slides cleared. While we're, of course, responding to this, we are monitoring the weather conditions. It is going to be in the high 90s, low 100s over the next day or so. There will be some warm, gusty winds from 25 to 35 miles per hour. This is significant because of individuals possibly not wanting to go back in their home. We're going to want to make sure that there'll be enough cooling centers and other kinds of things like water and shade to make sure that we don't have secondary issues. We're also monitoring fire weather activity throughout that part of the state and other parts of the state with regards to potential for wildfire. And Chief Porter from Cal Fire will mention that in a few minutes. So with that, I'm going to now turn it over to the commissioner of the California Highway Patrol, Commissioner Warren Stanley, or talk about CHP's support.
Thank you, Director Giladucci. As far as the CHP, we have approximately 68 personnel assigned to this incident. Started out, most of them were escorting some of the big rigs that are carrying supplies up to the Ridgecrest Trona area. We also have a number of personnel that are also providing law enforcement services to the our law enforcement partners there, the police department, the sheriff's department, and the fire department. We also have three of our airships up there, two helicopters and an airplane. The helicopters are using their thermal imaging capabilities to look for additional gas leaks and fires, and they're also assisting with damage assessment. Our airplane is also helping to check out some of the roadways in the area to make sure they're clear and no additional damage. And Director Kim will talk about that in a few moments. Also, our officers on the ground that are providing that roving patrol, they're also checking on all the state facilities in those areas to try to do a preliminary damage assessment to make the determination that those offices can open on Monday when state business goes back into action. So that's what we're doing now. We have a great team working together, working here with the other state agencies and our law enforcement partners in the area of Ridgecrest and up in Trona. And with that, I'll turn it over to Major Baldwin.
Morning, everybody. The California Military Department has 300 personnel on duty in response to this incident. We're flying missions in support of other response agencies to move responders and supplies into the area. We are also going to be flying both manned and unmanned surveillance aircraft to assist with damage assessment. We've moved 200 personnel in the vicinity of the incident to be ready to respond to requests for support from law enforcement or any other agency. And the rest of the California National Guard and California State Guard are ready in the event that additional military capability is required. We've coordinated with officials at the Pentagon, and if we need additional out-of-state support, they've committed that they'll be able to help us quickly if that's necessary. I'll be followed by Chief Tom Porter from CAL FIRE.
Oops, I'll trip over. Good morning. CAL FIRE, California's fire department, is fully staffed at peak levels to support this event as well as be prepared for any wildfires that may occur throughout the state during this period. Also, our Office of the State Fire Marshal is engaged with pipeline inspections under their jurisdiction and certifying that those are being done and the petroleum pipelines that they are looking at are safe to operate, and assessing along with DGS our responsibilities under the state building assessment. Thank you. I'll be followed by David Kim, Secretary, California Transportation Agency.
Good morning. There is good news to report on the status of roadways impacted by last night's event. All repairs have been made. All roads are now open. As the director indicated at the outset, in particular, State Route 178 sustained significant damage last night. Caltrans crews worked overnight to repair that damage. They also cleared all rock slides on State Route 178, State Route 127, and State Route 190. Also, all state bridges have been fully inspected and cleared for safety. And finally, Caltrans staff is in touch with local officials to provide any assistance for any needed inspections. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to Marco Meech, Deputy Secretary, Health and Human Services.
Thank you. Good morning. We have fully activated across our agency, and that includes the Emergency Medical Services Authority, the California Department of Public Health, and the California Department of Social Services. Secretary Galley is in communication with the local hospital, and we are not tracking any unmet needs at the time. We're also looking and are in contact with all the medical, health, and community care facilities in the region and are not tracking any unmet need. As Director Giladucci noted, we do have a shelter that is active in that area, and we're not tracking any unmet need at that shelter either. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Bob Fenton. I'm the FEMA Region 9 Regional Administrator. We've been coordinating closely with the State of California Office of Emergency Services since July 4th and the first earthquake. Following the event last night, we went ahead and deployed all the key federal agencies and departments up here to work with OES and state agencies to make sure that if there's any resource that the state needs to aid those impacted, that it's available and ready. We've gone ahead and pre-positioned some resources, and we'll continue to coordinate with the state. As Mark had talked about, the next step is actually doing preliminary damage assessments to see if what other federal authorities may be brought to bear to help those in the recovery of this event. That concludes my briefing. Thank you.
So we just came out of an hour-long briefing with the governor, and you know, to reiterate the priorities that he set for us, and what we'll continue to work here in the State Operations Center over the next operational period is to, you know, obviously continue to support the efforts to protect lives and property and the environment throughout this throughout the response phase as we transition from response into recovery. Continue to coordinate all the emergency operations that we're doing here and in our regional centers and at the local EOCs. Work to make sure that all of the critical infrastructure lifeline restoration gets done in this next operational period, working with our private sector utility partners, telecoms, and supply chain management groups. We'll continue to provide accurate public information as to what's happening with regards to the response and recovery. And then we'll focus on meeting whatever unmet needs are throughout throughout the region for health and medical and people with access and functional needs. Let me just say also that as we transition to recovery, today it's sort of a two things happening. We're still responding, but we're moving into place these assets that really can focus on determining the total amount of damage, and so that we can really start to work progressively to get individuals and the community back up on in the normal way of life. So that is going to be a big focus and we will probably, as the operational period goes on into tonight, tomorrow, you'll see some transitioning of response resources being demobilized and different resources being activated to be able to cover the various kinds of needs that will take place. The State Operations Center here with all the state and federal and private sector resources will remain fully activated until further notice. With that, happy to answer any questions.
Do you have any details on the number of injuries and severity of those?
I don't have the final number of injuries. We do know that there were a number of injuries, but most of them I would characterize in the minor to moderate level, and no report of any fatalities. So I think we're very lucky there, and happy there wasn't anything worse.
Can you talk about the conversations you've been having with the private utilities, especially as it pertains to gas lines, and then you have this added concern with wildfire potential?
Well, you know, we've been working very closely with the utilities over the course of the last few months in the effort of preparing communities as a result of public safety power shutoffs, and so that's helped to build that coalition in the effort of making sure that communities are as prepared as possible. We generally have, though, here embedded in the State Operations Center, the California Utility Emergency Association. It is an association that represents all of the power, water, wastewater, utility providers of telecommunications. They're embedded here, and they have been working very, very diligently, ensuring that that the priority to get power to things like the hospital is done first, and then, you know, as they move forward and branch out, that the rest of the community gets back up and operational. Right now, there's a big effort on doing gas leak detection, so they've got a lot of sniffer vehicles out there. And other kinds of equipment to ensure that the gas mains or the gas lines get fixed. That's going to always be an issue after an earthquake, and that could take a few days to be able to address that.
Can we go over safety tips for people that tend to forget how to act if an earthquake happens?
Yeah. So, well, the first thing is that if you're in a structure and you start to feel an aftershock or another earthquake, you want to drop cover and hold on. The idea is to get under something that is strong and heavy that will protect you in the event of anything that may be falling. You want to cover the back of your head and crouch down under that heavy piece of furniture. Standing in doorways is not a good idea. Standing next to a refrigerator is not a good idea. Refrigerators will move significantly and doors swing. Best to get down underneath something that's solid and in place to be able to protect yourself. If you're driving, pull to the side of the road. Put your car in park and stop in a safe location until the shaking stops. Really not want to go running outside if you're in a high rise. Use the stairwells after the shaking stops to go down the stairwells. Do not use the elevator. Be cognizant of things like glass that may be on the ground or falling glass above you if you do go outdoors. Important to have an emergency kit and some supplies. If you have not gotten those yet, go to one of the stores that's open and get some water and supplies in the event that there is an aftershock. The potential is, talking with California Geologic Survey and the United States Geologic Survey, the seismologist, there is will be a significant number of aftershocks, but there is a 5% chance that you could get another earthquake as large as this earthquake last night. So we want to make sure that people over the next 24 to 48 hours are prepared and cognizant of what to do should more earthquakes occur.
Next is a summary of what to expect from the G20, and it's an excellent summary I picked up on the web. Here we go right now.
Just start with the basics. So in your view, what's a realistic sort of Sunday night conclusion from this weekend's festivities?
I think the baseline expectation is straightforward. The U.S. will agree not to go forward with a final round of $300 billion in tariffs. China will agree to resume talks, even if, I assume, the U.S. doesn't roll back some of the measures that have been introduced over the last 6 weeks. Presumably there will be some goodwill gestures like the purchases of soybeans that were announced today. But the baseline is that talks will resume.
So we kind of know what the U.S. wants, or at least we think we know what the U.S. wants. What does China want out of this?
I think China wants, in the short run, it wants talks to resume without a loss of face. And then it wants a conclusion to the talks.
A loss of face?
Without a loss of face.
Oh, okay. And you think the U.S. is going to give that to them?
That was why Xi more or less insisted that President Trump commit ahead of the meeting that he isn't going to raise tariffs.
I see.
All right? You know, China wasn't going to meet the president and then have the president go off and say, oh, forget about, tariffs are back on. China wanted a commitment from the U.S. that indicated that there would be at least a short-term truce. China wants the U.S. to roll back the tariffs. It wants the U.S. to lift the designation on Huawei. And it wants, in some sense, a return to the status, pre-tariff status quo. It might like a few other things. It might like more access to the U.S. market for Chinese investment. But I think the baseline goals of China are to return to the previous pattern of trade.
The Huawei element of this, do you think that that could be in the offing to be given by Trump himself? I mean, we saw him dial it back with ZTE or ZT, as I'd say. Would that be a reality, even though actually many companies seem to be able to deliver to Huawei just fine by finding certain legal loopholes?
I wouldn't go so far as to say that this designation doesn't matter and that everybody's worked around it. The Huawei's projected fall in sales last week or 2 weeks ago was quite significant. I think this does matter. I don't think the workarounds are complete. I think the interesting question is whether President Xi will insist on some concession from President Trump on Huawei as his price for starting the negotiations. My gut is he hasn't, but I think that's certainly something to watch.
Let's talk about you wrote a very provocative piece this week. We often think of President Trump as being sort of the prime mover behind what people are calling deglobalization, the end of sort of free trade. You argue that Xi Jinping or China itself is just as much a contributor to this phenomenon, or maybe Xi Jinping is just as much of a contributor to this phenomenon as the U.S., and your evidence for it is China's falling share of imports relative to growth. So what's going on there?
If you look at China's imports of manufacturers over time and adjust for those imports, which are clearly tied to China's exports, they've tended to fall as a share of China's GDP. If you look at U.S. manufacturing exports relative to China's GDP, in 2005, the U.S. was exporting about 2% of China's GDP in manufacturers to China. Now that's down to 1%.
Huh.
China, in general, China's demand for manufacturing imports has grown more slowly than China's economy. And I think you can tie that to some Chinese policies. It's no longer called Made in China 2025, but Made in China doesn't suggest globalization.
Right.
It suggests rather the opposite. China has wanted production for the Chinese market to be in China.
Well, they've wanted that, but how ready are they to do that? Because it seems like that when you look at the relationship with the U.S., they're either going to have to hasten that pretty quickly, or they're going to be left behind because they really don't have the capacity to do a lot of the things that they want to do.
It completely varies by product.
Mm-hmm.
So if you ask the following question, did China's post-crisis construction boom lead to a sustained increase in U.S. construction equipment exports to China? The answer is no. U.S. construction equipment exports to China peaked several years ago and are now below where they were in 2007. If you ask a different question, can China survive without importing any U.S. semiconductors right now? The answer there is also no.
Real quickly, where does this leave the rest of EM? For the many countries for whom either export to the U.S. for many years or export to China was crucial, if China is finding that it doesn't need to import as much, whether from the U.S. or anywhere else, U.S. is deglobalizing, what happens to essentially the business model of all these other countries whose markets and economies have been fairly unimpressive for years now?
To be clear, my argument that China is deglobalizing is limited to manufacturers.
Okay.
China's imports of commodities have grown, continue to grow. Global capacity has expanded, so it's no longer providing the same positive price impulse that drove emerging market commodity exporters during the boom. Clearly, Asian manufacturers face pressure. They certainly face pressure on from China. They face pressure from China well before the trade tensions. Now there's an added risk that some of the adaptation that is going on in response to the tariffs could trigger a further U.S. response. Vietnam pretty clearly has been a winner, probably the only winner, out of the trade war. U.S. imports from Vietnam are soaring. But that's caught President Trump's eye, and he's now starting to criticize Vietnam.
Coming up next is an interview that Tucker Carlson had with President Trump, and he asked him a question about UFOs. And I think this is really an interesting answer that President Trump gave. Here we go about Tucker Carlson, President Trump, and UFOs. Here we go.
Welcome back to our special Trump in Asia edition of Tucker Carlson Tonight. We're standing right now on the North Korean border. Our interview with the president didn't simply focus on foreign policy or the decay of American cities, though you could fill hours of programming on those topics. The federal government is being increasingly open about its decades-long investigation of UFOs. They have spent millions of dollars, and officials admit now they've seen many things they don't understand. We decided to ask the president about it. It was his semi-cryptic answer. Watch. You gave an interview the other day in which you said you've been briefed on unidentified flying objects. Are they real?
Well, I don't want to really get into it too much, but personally, I tend to doubt it. I mean, you have people that swear by it, right? And pilots have come in and they said, and these are pilots that are not pilots that are into that particular world. But we have had people saying that they've seen things. I'm not a believer, but, you know, I guess anything's possible.
We spoke to a government official recently who said the U.S. government had wreckage from a UFO in a facility on an Air Force base. Are you familiar with
that? I haven't heard that, no. I haven't heard that. It has not been within government, has not been a big thing, but I've seen it. I've seen it on your show, but I've seen it. I don't assume it's correct, but, you know, I have an open mind, Tucker.
No, you do, Mr. President. Thank you for that.
Nowadays, you can believe anything, right?
Nick Pope is a journalist. He once investigated UFO sightings for the British Ministry of Defense, and he joins us tonight. So, Nick, I thought that was an interesting answer. The president said he had been briefed, quote, I don't want to get into it, but he's skeptical that UFOs are real. What does that add up to, would you say?
Well, first of all, I think it's absolutely refreshing to get a straight answer from a president, a sitting president on this, without dodging the question, without making some humorous reference to a science fiction movie. So that was good to hear. I understand the skepticism. I think everyone that started off looking at this within government starts skeptical. But as you say, this reference to the briefing that he has is very interesting. And when he says he doesn't want to get into this, does that reflect just that he's personally not that interested, or maybe that he received some classified information that he's not able to share about all this?
We spoke to a credible, non-crazy U.S. government official who said categorically, flat out, the U.S. government has wreckage from a UFO. It didn't say it was extraterrestrial, but it was an unidentified flying object, and the U.S. government has material from that aircraft, whatever it is. That's an amazing claim. How would the president not have heard that, assuming it's true?
Well, I think that's the big thing, assuming it's true. I mean, I would think that the president has probably asked the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, firstly, is there a threat here to the United States? And secondly, setting that question aside, what are we dealing with? I mean, is this our own tech? Is it Russia? Is it China? Or is it from somewhere further afield? I mean, he will have asked for all information held on this and will be trying to figure out what to do. I mean, he has said himself, something feels a little bit different about all this, with the U.S. Navy pilots and the radar operators now coming forward. So there is something different and important and big happening.
So what would you say, since you speak to a lot of people who are involved in this, not just in the professional UFO questioning world, which I think most of us have a right to be a little skeptical of, but of just, you know, ordinary pilots and people going about their business in government who have intersected with these stories or seen these objects themselves, what is the majority view about what these are? Russian, Chinese, American, or something else?
Well, I'm not sure there is a majority view. And even within government, and I've been here myself with the British Ministry of Defense, there were conflicting opinions. I mean, look, if the president would like more research and more briefing, I'm certainly happy to help with that. And I could probably round up a couple of other former intelligence officials from within the U.S. administration who've looked at this. And we could certainly, I'm sure, get some people who aren't afraid to think the unthinkable and ask those big what-if questions. But look, whatever happens with UFOs, this may happen on President Trump's watch. I mean, we may get, with the current radio telescopes, certainly with the next generation telescopes, we might get absolute confirmation that there's other civilizations out there, and therefore this might happen on President Trump's watch. He'll be the one who has to make the announcement, and what a historic announcement that would be. My fellow Americans, people of the world, we are not alone. So I'm glad to hear he's open-minded and thinking about this, because there has been an upsurge in these sightings, and who knows what the future will bring.
There's something terrifying about all that. But we're not in control, as you often point out. Nick Pope, great to see you tonight. Thank you.
Rather mysterious answer that President Trump gave, and they've all been briefed on this. Gerald Celente is going to give us some really good advice on the economy and gold. Here we go with Gerald Celente reporting on the InfoWars program.
Gold, of course, that's the leader. Where gold goes, so goes the global economy, because it's the ultimate safe haven asset. The higher prices of gold goes, the worse it looks around. And the reason the dollar is not going down, by the way, is because the other currencies are so weak. They got problems with Chinese banks. They're lowering the reserve ratio requirements, the money that banks have to hold to loan it out. So they're in a lot of trouble. Eurozone, they're going to be putting more quantitative easing. So watch gold, watch oil, and watch copper. Hello, hello. Great to be here on the Alex Jones Show. You know, I was telling you before about my book, What Zizzy Gave Honey Boy. And again, everything I've ever written is my favorite. This is about my 83-year-old aunt. And I was just thinking about it. Targeting some of the essential issues of our time, work, family, healthcare, politics, war, and aging in America, Zizzi made Salenti think about whether America was delivering on its promises. Have we lost too many timeless old world values in the march to progress? Are we really better off today than we were yesterday? And what does the future hold for each one of us, our families, our communities as a whole? So, took Zizzi to help Salenti see the unsettling truths about what has happened to America over the last several decades. They would talk about the world they once knew, a world filled with family, dinners together, and Sundays at church. So, if you want to get what Zizzi gave Honey Boy, just go to our website, trendsjournal.com, and you get a copy if you'd like to buy one. And, of course, the Trends Journal, our monthly magazine, new issue, coming out this week. So, and again, don't forget to support InfoWars. Put your money where your heart is. I want to talk a little bit about the economy. Boy, whew, markets went way up today, went down a little bit, back up. Gold went down. Here's my forecast for gold. Gold has to stay above the $1,385 an ounce mark for it to gain strength. The downside risk I see of gold is $1,270 between there, $1,250 at the very worst. I don't believe it's going to go down that low. I'm a trend forecaster. I don't tell you what to buy. I do not give financial advice. Gold has to break over $1,450 an ounce to spike to the 2000 mark. So I want to just give you some kind of few headlines. Oh, before I do, though, Apple picks China for production of new Mac Pro. Yep, it's the only device assembled in the U.S. Isn't that great? They got all these tax breaks, and now they're getting it made in China with those commies. Remember, we were told to hate those commies. We had moron teachers having us hiding under desks in case an atom bomb went off. Like that was going to save your life because we were afraid of those commies. Oh, and if you see a flash, don't look at it. Yeah, like, phew, you'd be toast if you saw a flash. That's the moron education system we have. We need a new education system, too. I write about that as well. Interactive university. You know, you saw what happened with Walmart. They're putting virtual reality on people that are hiring for management positions. It's the new way of learning. It's the 21st century. Our education system is a German system developed for the Industrial Revolution to take people that were making their own things and putting in centralized locations, read, write, do a little bit of math, and follow orders. And that's all our educational system is, to follow orders. So going back to Apple and trade, you know, this is where our future is, bringing the jobs back home, because the jobs at Walmart aren't paying a living wage. Millennials can't buy homes. You see the numbers coming out all the time. The story just came out now. Let me see if I could find it. Here it is. Okay. Want me to read the headline? $5. I'm only kidding. Rental demand surges as home sales keep sagging. People cannot afford to buy a home. So I'm totally in favor of bringing the jobs back. And to me, it's very simple. No trade wars, no tariffs. Put back in place the laws that existed before. End of story, Jack. And to be politically proper in these days, and Jill. Don't want to leave anybody out. Also, with the immigration issue, which is the big Democratic issue or dumbo crap issue, it's very simple for me. Put it on the ballot. Let the people vote. Yes, I want to bring in more immigrants, and I am willing to pay X amount of dollars for each one coming in for their health care, for their education, and other services. No, I don't want more immigrants, illegal immigrants coming in. I will pay X amount to build a wall or to protect the borders. Because to me, it's a very simple formula. Close all those 800 bases overseas, bring home the troops, secure the homeland, and while they're at it, fix our third world infrastructure. You know how many times you blow out your front end? You go down to New York City. Holy cow. The potholes in that road, all over the place. Third world rail we got. Taking a subway in New York is a night in Calcutta. So anyway, going back to the economic trends, yes, the Dow is up, but there's worry coming in that earnings are going to be down. And that's what you have to look at. And again, what we saw with these tax cuts, and again, I call them as I see them, according to the Tax Policy Center, well over 80% went to the 1%, and most of the money went into stock buybacks. They had capital improvements early on in the first few months, but that died. And now you're seeing Apple moving their production overseas, as are other companies. And again, I believe with Dr. Paul Craig Roberts, you get it made overseas, you pay the taxes coming back in for that product. That's who you put the trade tariffs on. Nike, Apple, Levi's. That's who you tax. Again, getting it made in Vietnam, how, you know, look what we did to our soldiers, guys my age. How many lives were lost? Almost 60,000, 250,000 wounded. People dying of Agent Orange poisoning. They finally just passed the law to give them some breaks, but not all of them. Yeah, now, you know, we're in our 70s. How much more life you have left? And they're finally getting it now. So no more wars. That's why I occupy peace. I honor the founding fathers, beginning with George Washington, a real man. Remember Washington crossed the Delaware? Yeah, could you imagine Clinton crossing the ocean to go fight? Or Obama or Bush. Couldn't fight their way out of a paper bag. So that's why I occupy peace. I want to go on to more economic news to show what's going on. They're coming out with the job figures on Friday. That's going to make a big decision on where the Fed is going to go. So, they're looking for, I believe, let me see here, 160,000 jobs to be created. Last month, they only created about 75,000. That number may be artificially low, and they may boost it back up. But my forecast is the Fed is going to lower rates in July, and they will probably lower them at least one or two more times this year and at least two more times next year. There's a global economic slowdown. That's why you're seeing oil prices where they are and not going up with the tensions in the Middle East. Matter of fact, Russia and Saudi Arabia just announced that they're going to keep holding back on production. The OPEC and non-OPEC members are cutting off some 1.2 million barrels a day. You're looking at some companies in the United States going bankrupt in the shale business and other oil-related businesses because the prices are low. Then you take a trip to Saudi Arabia. They need oil at $100 a barrel. Their economy to break even. And we're looking at what, 60-something dollars, $63-$64 a barrel for Brent crude. So these are indicators that's important to watch. Other ones to look at. Gold, of course, that's the leader. Where gold goes, so goes the global economy because it's the ultimate safe haven asset. The higher prices of gold goes, the worse it looks around. And the reason the dollar is not going down, by the way, is because the other currencies are so weak. They got problems with Chinese banks. They're lowering his reserve ratio requirements, the money that banks have to hold to loan it out. So they're in a lot of trouble. Eurozone, they're going to be putting more quantitative easing. So watch gold, watch oil, and watch copper. Copper prices are down about over 7% this year. Dr. Copper, they need it in everything, from high tech to heavy industry. So the lower prices go on copper, the lower the global economy. So those are the things to watch. And also, don't forget, support InfoWars. Do what you can to keep the truth alive. And we'll see you when I get back the next time.
Coming up next is D'Souza, and he's debating Michael Eric Dyson on an ABC interview. And he lays out this relationship with Alinsky that Hillary had and Obama. And he does a beautiful job of it. So here we go. It's about a five-minute clip. Here we go right now.
We're back now with the man called the Michael Moore of the right, author and filmmaker Dinesh D'Souza. He's out this week with the new film, America, Imagine the World Without Her, taking on liberal critiques of the country's past and present. But some are calling the movie historical revisionism. Here's Jeff Zeleny with a preview.
What if George Washington had been killed by a sniper's bullet?
Could this provocative take on American history be this summer's box office smash?
What would the world look like if America did not exist?
Controversial filmmaker Dinesh D'Souza offers a strident defense against the country's critics on historical issues like slavery and land taken from Native Americans, and against charges today of the excesses of capitalism and America's role in the world, all pushing back against what D'Souza calls the shame narrative.
If America is a force for good, why are they trying to make us feel bad?
The movie's other targets? President Obama and Hillary Clinton.
Hillary wanted the radicals to become the government.
It's a one-sided view of history that the right-wing filmmaker hopes will equal the success of his last movie, 2016, Obama's America. That took in over $33 million as one of the highest-grossing documentaries ever.
It's not a rah-rah patriotism that uncritically celebrates America.
On this Independence Weekend, a controversial look at America. New fireworks for the old partisan divide. For this week, Jeff Zeleny, ABC News, Washington.
And Dinesh D'Souza joins us live, as well as Georgetown University professor Michael Eric Dyson, who's interviewed in the film. Welcome to both of you. Mr. D'Souza, let me start with you. The majority of this film seems to be a defense against those who question anything about this country's history. Don't you have to look back, especially at something like slavery, acknowledge what happened before you can move forward?
Absolutely. And actually, in the beginning of the film, we have numerous critics of America, you included, Noam Chomsky, a Native American activist, and we lay out the case against America very passionately and without me making any defense. But I think that the film then turns around and addresses the critics and makes points that get neglected. So, for example,
pretty quickly it moves on. I've watched, as I told you, I've watched the entire film. Moves on very quickly.
The reason is that the critique is so well known. In fact, it's drummed into young people endlessly in schools and in colleges. What's missing is the answer to it. So, for example, when Martin Luther King said, "I'm submitting a promissory note, and I demand it be cashed," what was he talking about? Actually, he was talking about the Declaration of Independence. So the reform movements in America to change things have not been breaks with the American founding. They've been returns to the American founding. So that's what the film is. It's a defense of the spirit of 1776, the same spirit that brought me to America as an immigrant to live a kind of life unavailable elsewhere in the world.
Well, look, to say that there's not a discontinuity between Martin Luther King Jr. and the larger American compact and project is absolutely right. The problem is, it's not the left that said that. It's not progressives that have made that claim. It's people on the right. Now, they'll make an exception for Martin Luther King Jr., but those of us who are critics of the American state don't believe that America is a nation doomed to its own, hoisting its own petard. We're saying that, look, if you love America, as James Baldwin said, he said, "I love America more than any other nation on this world. therefore I reserve the right to criticize her relentlessly. And I think the point you began with is something that we should remember, that those who are critics of America don't hate the nation, they love the nation. They want to love it into a better future. Martin Luther King Jr. said the night before he was murdered, America, be true to what you said on paper. If the litmus test of authentic patriotism is the commitment to an ideal and a goal that furthers the conversation about all people participating equally, then that's the kind of conversation we have. He shouldn't be demonized, or others who succeed in his, who are successors to him should not be demonized for their questioning.
Professor, I want to move on quickly because we don't have too much time on this. At the end of your film, you make a turn to politics more directly, and you essentially have a conspiracy theory about Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama turning this nation into a socialistic nation, something you said started when Hillary Clinton was in college.
Yeah, it's not a conspiracy theory. Rather, a lot of people think that Hillary is like Bill. They go, well, we kind of want Billary back in the White House because, and the point we make in the film is no, there's actually a bridge connecting Hillary to Barack, and that bridge is Saul Alinsky. Now, many of us develop our political ideas in our formative years. I was a young Reaganite in the early 80s. Obama talks about standing at his father's grave and having a sort of moment of revelation. Hillary met Saul Alinsky in high school. She brought him to Wellesley College. She wrote her thesis on him. So we're not inventing a connection between Alinsky and Hillary. The connection is well documented. What we show in the film is rare footage of
Professor
Alinsky.
Professor Dyson, just quickly, we have about 30 more seconds.
Well, here's the reality. Yes, she has interpreted and interpolated Alinsky, but she's not given the suspicions of Mr. D'Souza, somebody who's trying to bring down American government. She's trying to make that rare act of a politician in public, to bring ideas to bear upon the forces that prevail, that help the nation become its best self, and to work against the demons that are bespeaking, if you will, a negative impact on America. So Alinsky, in terms of his impact on Obama and Hillary Clinton, I'm sure the Alinskyites would say it's barely discernible now in their political lives.
Thank you both. It's a very interesting movie. Everybody should go see it.
I'm going to end up with a clip that Charlotte Littlefield Brown found on the internet, and she called my attention. I want to thank you, Charlotte, for coming up with some of these jewels. It's a black man telling about what America means to him. So here we go right now.
I'd say the worst thing about the conversation between myself and the left-wing supporter, I presume, so that's great, is that she purposely wouldn't exactly give me a chance to answer. She was trying to, let's say, spark an emotional response. By what she was talking about was slavery, because I guess she feels like, well, since I'm black, I have to relate to slavery, and that's got to be a hot button issue. Never mind the fact that I've never been a slave, don't know anyone, and I'm not a slave, of course. She asked me the question, you know, on my hat, when was America great? I answered it like this: America has been great from the very start, because this nation was founded on the principles of freeing us from tyranny. Okay, there were slaves and so forth, but there were a lot of people of all colors, let's say white, in this nation that did not feel like that was correct. And this nation from that time has been moving out of tyranny, from bondage in one way or another, whether it be from Britain or whether it be from slavery as a whole. In case she doesn't know, there was a civil war. And in part, a whole lot of white people, if you look at history, died because they wanted this nation and people like myself to be free. I believe that. Wait a minute, let me get myself together.
You're together, you're fine.
Because when you talk about this country, I do love the country. Because this nation gives you the right to move yourself up out of any poor, bad position that you're in like no other nation. While some nations might step on you and say, hey, you're going to stay like that, or they have the classism, we don't. What she's saying about this nation is horrible, basically saying, oh, it's just full of racism. I should be stupid enough to believe that when I'm sitting right here and see people who are nice of all colors that do things, work together, and this fool wants to take us back to a time when everyone hates each other.
See, not everybody's a fool. We do have other things going on out there. We have Grace One that's sitting at anchor in the Gibraltar port. And it was detained by the British on the supposition that it was shipping oil in violation of the sanctions to a Syrian oil refinery in the Mediterranean there. So it's sitting there at anchor being detained by the British on request by the Americans. And so we don't know what's going to happen. The Iranians are saying it's they're raving mad because we know it's Iranian oil. But the authorities are trying to de-emphasize it being Iranian oil, but saying that there was, a shipment going to Syrian port where the refineries is, and that's in violation of the sanctions. And so we've got all America is upset way out in the West. We've had earthquakes were devastating. We had one earlier this morning at 7.1 in the same general area as the one yesterday at 6.4. And so we did play an update on that. We got the tanker being detained. We've got Trump, being completely attacked for being a patriot at his July 4th. We've got people standing up and defending Trump. And we had a flag burning that occurred on July 4th outside, out north of the White House there. And there were two groups. One was Proud Boys with other Trump supporters. And they came in a brief scuffle with a group called Revolutionary Communists. Now this group that put together Ocasio-Cortez is named Justice Democracy, and they're a spinoff from a Bernie Sanders group earlier, individuals that were working for Bernie Sanders. When he was knocked out of the primary, then they created this Justice Democrats, and they put out feelers and announcements to try to recruit you could say spawned politicians on the left to represent them. And Cortez was one of those. She just got back from Clint, Texas, touring down there, and she's alleging that there was people that told her they were drinking water out of toilets and things like this. We have that being refuted by some of the top officials, and so Homeland Security and so forth, that said, no, that's not it, and there's water jugs right outside of their so-called holding cells, and they can get to it at any time, and they wouldn't deny them water at all. And they certainly, no one there has been briefed on or permitted to say to drink water out of a toilet. So that is bogus. And then there are allegations that Cortez was intimidating some of the border patrol down there and so forth. So we got a damn mess going on in the country. We just got to try to bring it together the best way we can. This last interview of this black man saying, look, America has stood up in the Civil War for black rights, and they did away with slavery. So there's some white people out there that have died, on behalf. And there are people in the Civil Rights Movement that helped. So no, it didn't come easy. And the Democratic Party was a defender of prejudice for years in the South. The solid South were Democratic because it was in reaction to the loss of the Civil War. And so they came together under the banner of the party Democratic Party to try to fend off the power takeover that was occurring by the Northern people, the carpetbaggers, after the Civil War. So that's where out of that came a very prejudiced and a very racist party early on. And later on now, there have been other people that have taken it over. So they're not espousing the same views as the Democratic Party earlier sponsored. We want to thank everyone, each and every one of you out there, for listening and supporting us like you do. And we're just trying to make some sense to this world. And it can get pretty chaotic at times. But thank you very much for listening tonight. And God bless each and every one of you. So good night. Sleep tight. Sweet dreams, everybody.